Okay, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 190. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we got a handful of new things this week, including a movie that we both watched. But I wanted to start off with a brand new theatrical release, also because I was wondering what you thought of it, and that's Escape Room.
Yeah, I went to go see Escape Room. What to say about this one? It's a movie. It has some cool visuals. Basically, the premise is that these six people, they each receive a puzzle box. It almost reminded me of like the box from like Hellraiser. Like it kind of looked like that a little bit. Built like less archaic looking, but like a strange little black puzzle box. These six people get it, and it once they solve it or find a way to open it, they're invited to come to this place that does escape rooms. They show up and shit immediately starts to go like really weird. Think like one of the let's see there, I think it was like Saw 5 maybe, where it had like the it started off with like a group of people like locked in a room, and then like as they progress like they start losing people. So that's kind of what happens here, is like they start out in this room, and when the game starts, like which they inadvertently do, which they inadvertently start themselves, once it starts, like then like the room starts trying to kill them. And it's set up very much like a regular escape room, like where it's a big room, there's lots of clues around, and you're trying to find the clue or the series of clues that will lead you to the exit. And except it's like a giant death trap. And so the first one, if you've seen the trailer, you probably know that it's like this oven room, like where the room starts getting hotter and hotter. There's a puzzle. The puzzle is okay. It's kind of Resident Evil-y in a way, like those type of the puzzles. Like I thought that was kind of cool. But then as it progresses, it gets more and more absurd. Like the rooms start getting more elaborate. There's some weird tie into like each of the six are were picked for a reason. They play out the reason, and I don't know. It was fine. The main character, the one on the poster, played by Taylor Russell. She plays this girl named Zoe. And I guess the other thing that she has been in is the Lost in Space, that the Netflix reboot remake thing. She plays one of the daughters on that. She's okay. She's kind of an enjoyable character. Like you like her, you're rooting for her. She obviously has some issues, like there's some hang-ups that she has that make things interesting. They all have like something in their past that has brought them this way. The other one is the other one I liked is was played by Deborah Ann Wall. Trying to think of she was in True Blood, but she if you've seen like if you've seen Daredevil, she
She's the
Karen.
like the girl that they hire, yeah,
Yeah,
and
she's the
Daredevil.
receptionist. I like her. She's kind of a fun character in this, but all the rest of the characters kind of suck. It's like they're all kind of jackasses, and I don't like any of them. And you want them to die. So it really just becomes like a, oh, how crazy can they make the rooms? And how much fun is that? And it stops escalating in fun about halfway through. like the rooms start getting less and less interesting as they try to fit more backstory in. And then they kind of rush through the back half. So like that first half is fun. It's a enjoyable kind of like shit. We're locked in a room cube style like one of those Saw movie type things. But, it doesn't hold through all the way through. I wasn't bored with it, but I didn't come out of there going, that was fucking awesome. Like, it was like, yeah, it was all right. Like, there's a couple cool puzzles, a couple cool, like, set pieces and scenes, but ultimately it's nothing, like, to run out and see. It's just okay.
It's one, even, like, with you saying that, like, I'm like, I want to see it. It sounds cool. Like, it sounds like a Saw type thing, but...
It's a cool concept, I think. Like, and I don't know. Like, we just don't get, like, a lot of these types of films. Like, it's not particularly gory or gruesome. Like, it's just it's interesting, like, in its premise.
Well, that's what I was going to say is I was just looking, like, it's rated PG-13, so I'm guessing the kills aren't that amazing. Like,
no, I mean, like, they're, like, it's more that the rooms themselves, the construction they come up with is interesting. It's
clever.
The kills actually are, for the most part, kind of, like, meh. Like, it's not like, oh, shit, that happened. Like, there's no oh, shit moments. It's just like, that's kind of cool that, like, they did this. But the deaths themselves are actually kind of like, meh. Like, the first one that happens is just, like, not a minor spoiler, but, like, dude just drowns. Like, if you've seen the trailer, you see the one where, like, they're walking on, like, some ice. This kid gets, he falls through the ice and, like, very cliche, like, drowns while the others can't find him. And the rest are kind of in the same vein. Like, there's nothing that's like, oh shit, that guy just got decapitated or something came out of nowhere and got him. Like, there's no real oh shit moment. Even the big reveal at the end for, like, what all this is, isn't, like, if you've seen anything ever, you can kind of pick out, like, exactly what's happening. It's fine. Like, I don't feel bad that, like, I used one of my free passes for the week to go see it. Like, I wasn't all right. Like, oh shit, that was a waste of 2 hours. Like, it was fine. Like, it was plenty enjoyable.
Rating?
3.
All right.
Yeah.
I saw some of the bigger movies that are out there for, like, Oscar season.
Yeah.
And I cheated and I watched them online. So, not quite legally, but I watched them. And they were like SD versions of them. So,
oh, really?
They weren't cam or anything, but they also weren't like Blu-ray quality.
Okay.
Anyways, I saw Vice, which is the new Adam McKay film. And yep. he did The Big Short. I want to say he did Game Change back in the day for HBO. You know, this is a guy, I think he was like a comic director back in the day, like did comedies mostly, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he was the Anchorman director.
Okay.
He directed Talladega Nights. Like, I mean, you're not a Will Ferrell guy, but he, like, that was where he got his start at, was like doing Will Ferrell movies. Like,
and he works with Will Ferrell. Like, Will Ferrell produces these movies too. So, like,
I mean, yeah, he did all the big Will Ferrell movies: Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers.
Then he kind of like transitioned out of that into like political, you know, stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, he did the Big Short, which was up for a lot of awards a couple of years ago, and now he's back again with this. You know, and it feels a lot like The Big Short. Like, it's like him, you know, coming at it from a very particular point of view, you know, taking shots at Republicans and stuff. Steve Carell is in this one also as Donald Rumsfeld. And I've seen like people all over the place on Vice, like saying, you know, I saw some people react to it like really positively, like early out of the gate. But then I heard like a lot of people saying it was like one of the worst movies of the year.
Yeah, like when we were coming up on the end of the year, like one of the ones I was like, I kind of want to see Vice. Like it's getting some good buzz.
Yeah,
but that changed dramatically. Like,
yeah, like
the last like 6 weeks or so.
I don't know. I listened to Slash Filmcast and one person I remember for sure is Dave Chen being like super against it and saying that like, you know, if you were remotely paying attention at all during that time, it's not going to tell you anything new. And, you know, it's very smug and self-satisfied and kind of lecturing and stuff. And you know, he wasn't the only one though. Like I want to say one of the other guests also like thought it was terrible. And like, I just seen people like ripping on it. So I was like, all right, I guess maybe it's not going to be good. I don't know. So I went into it, like kind of just like, let's see what this is all about, and ended up being like entertained throughout. And, I really liked Christian Bale's performance as Dick Cheney. Like, it's like one of those performances where it's like an impression of somebody. And it's like so damn close to like he didn't just like get fat to play. Like he like paid attention to exactly like things like Cheney does with his face and his mouth, the way he hangs his head, the way he talks. Like it feels like Cheney. So like, that's kind of like fucking crazy. Especially like, you know what Christian Bale looks like in real life? Like, super impressive. And, like, yeah, I mean, I guess I knew pretty much everything that it was telling me, but also, I mean, that's okay, I guess. Like, I think The Big Short's kind of unique, too, in that, like, he got to explain something that people, like, don't understand, and it's hard to understand. Whereas this is just like, yeah, dude, fucking Republicans fucking suck, and this guy was part of them, like, going back to, like, the Nixon era, like, and kind of, like, how he wormed his way in. Into the halls of power and how he never could have been a president, but he kind of worked it out in a way that like he was the president here and fucking like, you know, had way more power than any vice president before him. It's kind of like running the show because George Bush was a dummy, you know? So I guess none of that is really new, but I found it to be like, I liked the cast. I thought it was well done. I liked some of the shots it took at stuff, like especially one that's like in the ending credits where like they just kind of rip on the audience. it wasn't as good as The Big Short, but also like wasn't. I didn't find it to be terrible at all. I was fine with it. I mean, I don't know what else to say except that, like, I found it to be entertaining, and I liked the cast, and I thought Christian Bale especially. But there's like tons of people, like, you know, Sam Rockwell was George W. in this. Amy Adams plays Dick Cheney's wife.
Yeah, like at least from an acting perspective, I still kind of want to like see it.
And it does, you know, it does hit on like it has like a clear narrative of like how we got to where we are in a way. And like, you know, I think it pins a little too much of it on Cheney, but it's like, it's not inaccurate or anything. Like it's like, it shows things like Roger Ailes back in the fucking 70s, like going into Nixon's office to try to pitch him on this idea he had, which ended up being Fox News, you know, like it kind of shows all pieces falling into place to get to the nightmare that we're at.
Right.
I was fine with it. I'm going to give it 3 stars. I would say like, if the subject matter interests you, you'll probably like, I don't think you'll hate it as much as some people did. I'm still a little confused as to like what that people thought was so terrible, but
I mean, and obviously like that your perspective on it, that it isn't that it glorifies like, Cheney or
I don't think so. Like
if anything, it kind of, you know, paints Cheney in a you know, a bad light, and Bush is a bumbling fool.
So
more than anything, it's like I don't know. I don't know. Like, I've heard lots of problems from people, but I'm not really sure what their issues are. So
I mean, here's one thing. I'm giving it 3 stars, right? So I don't think it's like
right. It's not either. Great. Yeah.
Like, one thing I would say about it is, and it's something I don't love, is it does feel a lot like a biopic where you're going to hit certain beats. Everything's kind of with a broad brush, and you never get too deep. Like, it's like, oh, all of a sudden we're, you know, there's a part where it's just like, and then he became the CEO of Halliburton, and it just skips over that whole time of his life. And it's like, okay, how did you become the CEO? Like, it'd be like you're telling the story of my life, and it's like, yeah, he graduated college, and next thing you know, he became the CEO of Halliburton. It's like, how?
Weird.
You know, yeah, like how does that happen? You know, and so like it makes the mistake that a lot of biopics try to do, where like it tries to tell the guy's whole life. Like, you do see him when he's like in his 20s, and he's just like a drunk, kind of a loser, you know. And it just kind of, you know, feels like it's just going from thing to thing, you know, and doesn't go in too deep, and just kind of feels like scattered, or, you know, and it's like all of a sudden, well, I guess we covered this happened, this happened, this happened. We're at the end of his life, the end. Or, you know, I mean, he's not dead yet. But so it has that biopic feel, which I personally don't like either. But like, I also am into the material here enough. Like, to me, it's not, you know, it's more interesting than watching the story of fucking Queen or something. This is, you know, about something that kind of matters, you know, so.
Right, right.
For me, it was a 3. It was worth it. The other, you know, kind of movie that will probably be an Oscar contention that I saw was The Favorite, which is, it's a new film from Yorgos Lanthimos, who, like, is very, like, weird director. He did The Lobster. He did The Killing of Sacred Deer. And he did this one as well. I mean, he's weird. Have you seen any of his movies?
I don't think so. Dogtooth.
Okay, I've not seen that. He reminds me of Kubrick a little bit in that, like, he doesn't think very highly of people. Like, his movies are very cynical and very much like, people are terrible, and they're just motivated by their basest instincts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely that. This is like, you know, this is a Yorgos Lanthimos movie. It's the one that is supposedly his most, like, accessible. And it's also, even though it totally feels like a movie, like one of his movies, that's, I think, the first one I've seen that's not written by him.
Okay.
But anyways, it's like a period drama. It takes place, you know, in England back in the day. Queen Anne. So I don't know I don't even know if it's a real person. I don't know this shit. I don't really even care. But it's Queen Anne times. I'm assuming she's a real, like, historical figure. And the basic idea here is Emma Stone plays this girl named Abigail, who used to be somebody but lost her, like, standing in society because her dad was a bad gambler, and she actually got, like, sold to this guy because of her dad's gambling debt. And so she's kind of like a nobody now, and she's, like, trying to, like, rise back up through society. And so right. She, like, comes to the Queen of Britain, like, looking for a job. And discovers that the queen is, like, secretly having an affair with the Duchess of Marlborough, who's played by Rachel Weisz. And so, like, the basic idea is Emma Stone sees that, like, you know, the queen is having sex with one of her, like, top fucking advisors or whatever, essentially, right? And Emma Stone, like, wants to use this as, like, well, maybe if I get in close with the queen and I start sleeping with her, like, I could, you know, climb, you know, the ranks of power and be her favorite. It's kind of the idea. It's like, Mean Girls or some shit, but back in the day, like
like in the 1700s.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, this guy, I don't think I've hated any of his movies. I didn't hate The Lobster. I didn't hate The Killing of Sacred Deer. But I don't love any of them. Like, he's kind of 0 for 3 for me, where it's just like, and this too, it's just like, it's okay. It probably is more accessible than his other ones, because, like, you know, The Lobster is just an insane premise to begin with, and it goes even more insane places. Like, you know, it ends with someone trying to stab his own eye out with a fucking scissors. Like, it's just like, what is going on here? You know, the Killing of Sacred Deer is just like this pitch black evil fucking horror movie. I don't know, like, just none of them. Yeah, this is probably more normal because it's just telling a normal story, but it's also, it is like, it's still like, I'm baffled by what people, like, I don't get what people thought was so terrible about Vice, and I'm also just like, I don't understand what's so great about this. It kind of like, I felt like I knew exactly the type of movie I was watching right away here, and it kind of went exactly, you know, where I'd expect. Like, and none of it was really like, oh my god, like, or anything. He does this distracting fucking fisheye lens thing in a lot of scenes for no, like, I don't understand what he was going for with that. It doesn't like build to anything. Like, I thought there was gonna be some revelatory ending. I thought I was gonna love the final shot, or like, because just some people like walked away from this, like, some people really hyped this thing up. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know, man. I don't even know if it's my favorite one of his that I've watched, but it was just fine. You know, Emma Stone's really good in it, and I love her. You know, the cast is fine, but this is just kind of right down the middle for me. It's not
so
one or the like, other.
The trailers make it out to be like kind of fun and playful.
It's kind of funny. Like, the dialogue is actually really funny at points. Like, very, it's like, I guess, you know, Game of Thrones kind of put an end to this, but when you hear people talking in this very stylized, like, old English way, you don't expect them to say things like, I like the way your fucking tongue feels in my cunt, like, shit like that. We're just fair. Like, oh, okay, like the dialogue is very, like, X-rated at times here, and it is meant to be funny, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, and then, like, you know, like, is this like a serious drama or more of like a comedy? Kind of like, look at it, like, look at all these fucking like people, like, desperate to try to be the favorite. Like, I don't know. Like, I guess maybe it is more of a comedy. I don't fucking know. Huh. The Wikipedia has it listed as a historical period comedy drama film. So
that is a weird conglomeration of words that don't go together.
Yeah. I mean, if you put a gun in my head and said, which one is it? I would lean more towards comedy. Cause, like, yeah, are we really supposed to feel bad for any of these people? I don't think so. I think it's more pointing the finger at them. You know what I mean? Like look how awful people are. And it's just, I don't know. It's just fine for me. Like, didn't change how I felt about Yorgos Lanthimos. It's not, honestly, I don't think it's my favorite of his. I don't know, other than Emma Stone being in it. Yeah, it's just fine. I'm going to give it 3. It didn't blow me away.
We were on the 3 train.
Yeah, it's one of those weeks. Let's see if we can break it here. We're finally getting to a movie that we both saw.
Yeah.
And that is a comedy. I'd say a comedy. I don't know what you think.
I mean, that's probably the closest.
I'll let you introduce Support the Girls. What is this thing, Chris?
It's a day in the life movie. Really, it's a movie about a manager at a Hooters-esque local Texas bar and grill, where this middle-aged manager, Lisa, played by Regina Hall, she runs the hell is it? It's a trying to think of the name of
it. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it off the
like top
of
Double my head. Whammies. That's what it was.
Yeah,
Whammies. And it's the waitress is there wear little clothing, like they wear like booty shorts and crop tops and show a lot of cleavage and but it's a family bar.
Yeah, I mean it's like a Hooters. I mean, yeah.
That's the closest explanation I can come up with.
I was gonna say it's like a Chili's or something like that, but they wear slightly less clothes. I'm like, that's a Hooters.
Yeah, that's just a Hooters. It's just a bar and grill where they don't wear clothes, but do enough that it's not a strip club.
Yeah.
And she's having a bad day, as one will. And it just kind of chronicles that and her staff. There's a little bit more to it than that because she's dealing with a seemingly racist owner.
At the very least, an asshole.
At the very least, an asshole.
Just kind of a douchebag. I mean,
hothead. Yeah.
Classic restaurant owner, actually. Like, fucking shit bag. But anyways.
And I mean, that's really all this is. Like, she's having a bad day. And it goes through that. Like, it starts off with her getting to the restaurant early, and it ends. It actually ends, I think, like a little time later. But
like another day, I think.
Yeah, it like functionally ends at the end of that day after she has quit, been fired, whatever, for her job. It's fine. I enjoyed parts of it. I really like Regina Hall. She was fun.
I like the whole cast. I like especially her and like the two girls she's probably closest with there.
Yeah, Macy Haley, who played by Haley Lou Richardson, and
is she the really ditzy one. Yes.
Yeah, very very happy, upbeat, and I'm trying to think of who the other one is.
The other one, I can't remember her name, but she's played by Shayna McHale.
Danielle. Danielle was her name. She's they're both fun. Like actually like everybody like that they focus on kind of is fun. There's another one, Janelle. She's like this younger, brand new one that they brought on. She's fun too. She's like over sexualizing everything. Like she's like they're doing a car wash and she's the one getting up on top of the car. And she ultimately ends up like having the bar shut down because she shows a little nipple when the fight goes off. Everybody involved, like I kind of liked.
I liked a lot of things about this. Like, I don't want to like overhype it, but I think it is kind of like a perfect little movie. Like, it's doing what it's setting out to do, and it's showing a side of life that gets ignored a little bit, I think.
Like, and I also think like that, like it. This is not your big budget studio comedy. Like this is an independent like comedy at best.
It is like. Part of me says, like, this really does feel like a spiritual successor to Clerks, but it's never going as big with the jokes as Clerks, and it's not trying to be a joke a minute.
Right.
There's no laugh out loud things. Like, there's no 36 dicks joke or anything, like, raunchy like that. It's more, like, it's more subtle.
There's a bunch of stuff to, like, kind of, like, chuckle at, like... She comes in and like there's a dude who was trying to steal something, he was trying to break into the safe and he's like stuck in the air vent and like so it's just like it's like nonsense it's like nonsensical things that are just kind of amusing.
Yeah, I think one thing it captures really well about working in that type of environment, like I've worked at restaurants, but I compare it to like when I was working at GameStop and retail, the feeling that like there's like eight things happening at once and you're just trying to juggle them all, I think that the movie does a pretty good job of like showing that, like the way, because you're kind of following the manager around the whole day as she's dealing with everything. And it's just, you know, it's over the course of one day. She's probably dealt with fucking like 100 things. And some of them are coming at you at the same time, you know, and then forget about it and go on to the next day. But I think it captures that well. I think it's a movie that is like quietly about things. And, you know, like, yeah, it's just about a day in the life of people working at a restaurant, but it's also kind of about how much jobs suck. Like, and kind of like the economy we're in, how much it sucks and how undervalued people are.
Yep, like, because even Lisa herself does it. Like, they need to hire new wait staff, and they bring them in like a line. Mm-hmm. It's just like, we're gonna interview all, like, she ends up having to hire all of them all at once. But
yeah,
like, it's just like there's like this assembly line kind of feeling to how hiring and firing works.
And just kind of like how dehumanizing the environment can be. And it's just like, it does like these nice little things though too, like where it's like there's a part where she's talking to one of the cooks in the kitchen and she's like essentially firing him, but she's like doing it like this is something I have to do, you know? And like, I don't know, it's just weird. Like, the guy respects that. And he's just like, you're always very generous, you know? And
yeah.
Like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know. There's something about that that was like a heartbreaking scene.
And it was just, it was funny too. Like, that whole scene, I think that was like the, to me, like, that was the closest, like, I got to like really just like laughing at it, because it's just like, and I've totally been there working in retail as well.
Yeah.
All right, I have to fire you because, like, you obviously you've done something that is against company policy, but also, I don't have anybody to cover your shift. So, that was
crazy. Oh no, honey, you don't need to go yet.
Yeah. you can quit after your shift.
It just felt like a very observant of the time that we're in, and about a part of life that you don't see, like, and which is crazy too, because like this is real life for a lot of people, you know. And at the very least, you know, a lot of people have had a job like this at some point. So yeah, I really liked it, and like there's I do like the things that are going on and kind of the background and the way it doesn't overexplain it. Like, there's stuff with her boss, but then there's also stuff with her husband that they don't overly explain, but they, you know, they trust you to figure it out, you know?
Yeah. I I'm not necessarily against it, but they do just kind of like gloss over some of that stuff. It's like, all right, you know, she's having some issues with her husband.
And it's interesting too, the way she refers to it when she's talking to like any of her coworkers, she acts like everything's fine. Like,
right.
Like, there's a part where they said something about, oh, you know, you're gonna let that girl stay with your husband all day, and she's like, that's the least of my worries with him, you know. Just like, you know, like, she's like saying the little amount of possible, and you're supposed to figure out the rest. And I just, some like the background characters I like too, like their one regular customer, the girl is always, yeah, like, hanging out in there, looks like a truck driver and
yeah,
kick anyone's ass. There's like the guy who works at the electronics store next door who just starts hanging out with them at the bar. I don't know. Like, I just, it felt like one, like, it did, honestly, to me, felt like something like Clerks. I'm trying to think, there's been other movies like that too.
There's a, and I'm drawing a blank on it, but there was a Ryan Reynolds movie.
Oh yeah.
Was that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it reminded me a little bit of that too.
Well, it's the same thing too. It's kind of a day in the life at like a restaurant, but that was trying to have, I think, more of a plot, and it was also more swinging at the fence with the jokes than this is. You know,
so that's a fun movie too. Some of them do not.
Yeah, but I really like this. I'm happy I watched it, and it's kind of, like I said, I think it kind of nails what it's doing. I dug the ending too. I just wish it kind of went more crazy inside the bar before that little final scene that we get. But I dug the final scene too. Like, I knew I could feel it, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be the ending. I'm screaming, but kind of felt right, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I thought the whole part of the bar was great, but I thought like it could have went crazier with them antagonizing the boss and shit.
Yeah, like they don't really like push at him at all. They just like basically like, oh, we're gonna act out, and because our boss has been fired, and like they've hired this, like he's promoted this dickbag over anybody else, but they don't really like, they don't wreck shit. Like, I guess like, and you wouldn't like, it's more true to life in that manner, but it's also, it never reaches like the high highs of like absurdity that something like, you know, like Clerks or a Clerks 2 does.
Yeah. Like, you know, you think about the ending of Clerks 2, that goes pretty crazy. In the climax there, they're doing like a donkey show inside of the place. But, I don't know. I don't have a lot of complaints, though, honestly, with this one. I'm fine with it being what it is.
Yeah, no, I think it's worth watching.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's on Hulu, so if you have Hulu, this is an easy recommend. But I'd say this is worth seeking out, even if you don't. So I'm going to give it 4. Chris, how about you?
I'm going to give it 3, but it's a definite recommend. Like, you give it a watch. It'll put a smile on your face at points. So
yeah. It got me above a 3 for the week. So, and I guess I had one more movie.
Yes,
that is Bad Times at the El Royale, which you have not seen. I don't think, or not, have you?
Okay. It was something I wanted to see, but it kind of like came and went real quick.
Yep. So this is a movie that is written, directed, and produced by Drew Goddard, who did he wrote, at the very least, what the hell is that movie that you like, Cabin in the Woods. Yep. Yeah, movie I revisited recently. I still am just like
not a fan of.
No, yeah, this I liked more. Probably it's not a horror movie. This is kind of like a crime thriller type thing in the, you know, at a hotel.
Okay.
Like, I was entertained by this. I ultimately like it. I'm gonna say, I'll let you know, I'm gonna recommend it, but like, I have a lot of issues with it.
It's long. It's like 2.5 hours long.
You know what? And that wasn't really one of my problems. Like, I was fine with the length. I didn't really feel it.
Okay.
That's
good.
My problem though is this is one of those movies where you're like in the dark for half the movie, where you're just like, you have no idea what's going on because they purposely don't let you know anything. And it's like, I've gone on about this probably a million times on here, but I think that's a bad way to do suspense. It's like I need to feel invested. I need to have my footing somewhere in your story and some understanding of what the character's motivations are for me to care. And it takes way too long for that to happen here, where like, literally the first hour, you're just like, I don't know what any of these people are checking into this hotel for or why. Like, you're given a little clue in the opening scene of the film. You see Nick Offerman check into a hotel room, and he rips up the carpet, tears up the floorboards, and buries a bag of money underneath it, and then puts everything back. Someone knocks on the door, he answers it, and that person shoots him and kills him. And then it just says 10 years later. And then after the 10 years later, you get just like different people showing up to this motel, or this hotel called the El Royale. That's like, it's at the border between California and Nevada. So you could stay like on a California side or a Nevada side.
Right.
And you have this strange cast of characters all checking in, like John Hamm. You know, checking in, what's his name? Jeff Bridges as like a priest. Also, like, they're all showing up to this fucking hotel in the middle of nowhere. And seems like the hotel is basically like on the verge of closing down. You know what I mean? Like, it's like all these people show up at the same time to a hotel that was like vacant before that. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird. Like, and you're just like, what? Like, why are these people here? Are they all like looking for the bag of money? Because that's like the only thing you know for the first hour, right?
Right.
And I think it's a problem. Like, again, I think it's just give me one person's motivation early on. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm like, okay, this is what this is about. Because, like, otherwise, like it is, for half the movie, you're like, I don't know what this movie's about or why I should care about anything. As you start to find out, I think it's kind of cool, little interesting stories. And it kind of does, like, these little, like, side, like, short stories where, like, you find out what John Hamm is doing there. And you get to end of a part of his story. And then it starts over and you see what Jeff Bridges is doing. And they start to tie in, like, you know, you start to see things from another character's angle. You know what I mean? Everything starts to fill in as to what's happening at this hotel. But I guess my other problem with it, too, is once you do find out why everyone's there, I'm like, okay, so this movie, this story relies very heavily on coincidence that, like, all these crazy people are going to be showing up at this hotel in the middle of nowhere for different crazy reasons, and crazy stuff is going to happen in which they interact with each other. Like, to the point where, like, it just doesn't feel believable on any level. Like, there's no way that all, like, because they're not all there for the bag of money. One of them is. But, all, like, there's a reason why some people are there that has nothing to do with that at all. It's just like, but they're all, like, these crazy fucking reasons why the people are there. I don't know. It's a stretch. We're just like, yeah, okay, I guess, whatever. But I guess the whole time, like, I'm like, this thing is stylish enough. The cast is cool enough. It's like, entertaining enough, even though it's almost 2.5 hours long. It's like, it feels like it moves along at a decent clip. Like, there's always another reveal happening or another burst of violence or something. You know what I mean? Like, there's something always kind of happening and you're kind of engaged. And, you know, as I learned it, like, certain things I was, like, into. I was definitely into, like, the story about the bag of money, you know? But I guess, you know, I was like, yeah, you know what? That was all right. Like, despite all these things that I think are, like, writing flaws, I'm like, it had enough style to it that I was enjoying it. You know, like, I had a good enough time. But then I started to think about it more, and I'm like, okay, that movie didn't answer some of its biggest questions that it poses, like, some of its biggest mysteries that it sets up, it never answers. So I'm just like, what the fuck? Why didn't you answer? Like, there's one thing about a tape that was very valuable because of what was on it, like some politician or something, right? And I was like, oh, I thought I knew exactly what it was going to be. I'm like, oh, Herbert Hoover's on that tape, and they got him dressing up like a girl or whatever, and John Hamm's at the hotel, and he's like an FBI guy, and he's like there to like destroy it, or I don't know, right? Some bullshit like that, right?
Right.
No, they never explain it. They make this big deal about this fucking tape and who's on it. And I'm like, oh, we're gonna reveal it. And I'm like thinking I'm all clever because I got it figured out. I'm like, oh, because they keep saying it's like, you know, it's about who's on the tape and blah blah blah. Oh, it's probably gonna be Herbert Hoover or some shit like that because it's like that era. Nope. It just I'm like, okay, there's a whole other thing about the hotel that never gets explained at all. Like, you think it's going one way, and then they tell you something else, but they never actually go back to explain what the hotel actually was. I'm just like, that seems like a huge flaw. Like, these are two of the biggest things that they pose in the movie, and they never explain. So, as you can tell, I have, like, a lot of issues with it. Maybe we could go more in-depth once you see it, but I did find it entertaining. Like, it's entertaining enough for me to say it's like a recommend, but you might have some of those same issues too if you're like watching it closely enough. I don't know. I'll give it a 3.
All right.
I like its style. I like its characters.
You've convinced me at least to give it a go. Like, give it a shot.
I mean, hey, I liked it more than Cabin in the Woods, so I don't know what that means. You really like that one, so maybe you'll love this. It's different though. Like, it's him doing a different genre. It's just,
yeah, just fine. Like, I mean,
but this is more true. Like, this is more true to that genre than what Cabin in the Woods is. Like, Cabin in the Woods is like this dissertation or whatever the fuck on horror movies, where this is just like, no, I'm gonna be like a cool kind of, almost feels like a 90s style like crime movie where you're coming at stuff from different angles and it fills in, and like, you know, almost like Tarantino.
Right, right. Or I dug it. That spate of Tarantino imitators.
Yes, and this would be like one of those imitators. Yeah. So, I mean, again, there's just certain things about it that bug me. But I don't know. I think John Hamm and Jeff Bridges were two parts of it that I really liked. I actually like the whole cast. The whole cast is really good. So, and just like that hotel looks cool. So, I had nothing going for it where I was like fine with it, even though I had so many problems with it. So, it's 3. I'll be happy to hear like when you see it. Like, you know, we could definitely go into like spoilers. I tried not to spoil anything too big there, but I think that's everything I saw this week, Chris.
All right then. I do think that is it. That's all I've seen. So,
Chris, I believe we mentioned last week something about, I don't know, doing more franchises this year.
We did.
Have you given any thought? Have any popped in your head? Like, you have a list now in your head. You're like, oh, we can do this, we can do that.
I mean, there are ideas percolating, but nothing I am like hell bent on us actually doing. But I think you did have a suggestion for our first one.
Yeah, I was going to let you go first, but you know what? I got these, and I think this will kind of fit in with at least what I'll be reviewing next week, which is Glass. Superhero movies of our youth, Chris. I am proposing for our first franchise of the year.
Okay.
Batman 1989 through Batman and Robin. Kind of like those four. It kind of felt like they were all part of the same franchise before it rebooted with, you know, Batman Begins.
Yeah. I mean, they lost Michael Keaton for forever, but
and you know, then they lost, yeah, it was like Tim Burton did 1 and 2, and then there was, I think Schumacher did both 3 and 4.
Yes, he did do both 3 and 4.
And you have different people playing Batman in those two. But it did just kind of feel like they're all one thing at the time.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily.
Like, there's like, definitely.
It didn't feel like a reboot. Let's put it that way, right? Like, it didn't feel like they're rebooting Batman. It was just, I mean, they were all standalone enough that.
But they all, like, even though they changed directors and, you know, they kind of had the same feel. I mean, we'll see going over them again. Like, it definitely gets worse after Burton leaves, I guess. Well, I mean, we'll see what you think. We'll see. That's why we're going to revisit them, because honestly, I haven't seen these movies in a long, long time. You know, once the Nolan one came, like those came around in the 2000s, like, they kind of were the new standard. And, you know, for whatever reason, I just never go back to those, especially, you know, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, for obvious reasons. But, you know, it's interesting because at the very least, 1989 was very well revered when it came out. I think it still kind of is now. It's so different. Yeah. You know, like, it's so different from what you think of now. And those movies were so, like, far before, like, comic book movies were a big thing, you know.
Well,
like,
it was, I mean,
Superman and that,
right?
That was it.
It is before the modern age of superhero movies, which, I mean, you can make an argument that Blade started that, but I think it's probably more X-Men.
Yeah,
that is more when this modern spate of superhero movies started.
And you're talking, you know, this is a full decade before that.
Yep.
And when we were kids, this was it. I mean, yeah, there was Superman and there was this.
Yep.
So I think it's gonna be interesting to go back and see how we like them still. You know, And it's funny too, because I remember at the time, like, as they were coming out, you know, I was still a kid, and so like the first time I saw Batman Forever, I thought it was the best one yet. I thought they kept getting better.
So when, I think, when you saw Batman and Robin,
when I saw Batman and Robin, that I think was the first one where I was like, okay, that's not as good as the previous one, but I still thought it was good. But yeah, when I saw Batman Forever, like with Jim Carrey, I'm like, oh man, these keep getting better. Like, you know, and now, you know, with time, I think it's kind of, you know, most people remember the very first one as the best.
The most fondly, yeah.
I think people have varying opinions on the rest. But I mean, but most people saying Batman and Robin's garbage.
Yes.
I think folks, so that's going to hold up, but I think it'll be fun to go through. So if you're down, let's do like the first two for next time.
So Batman and Batman Returns.
Yeah, yeah, buddy.
All right. We can do that.
And, you know, we'll wrap those up, and then I'll let you pick the next one that we do. Again, it doesn't have to be like right away, like, oh, in the next week we have
something. Yeah, we'll just do them over the course of the year.
I will say this. I have probably one or two other series already in mind that I'm like, that would be fun to do. So I'm trying to keep it to like shorter, like than
not like
someone told us to do the whole MCU today. I was like, no, absolutely fucking not.
No,
on top of the fact I don't like the MCU, no.
Right, like it's like, I mean, I do like the MCU, and I don't want to undertake that.
It's
like
too much. 18 it's films, way too much. Yeah,
but that was a fun conversation. People should follow us on Twitter.
There's all sorts of tangents. I was going crazy today. Yeah. But anyway, so for next time, I will have a review of Glass. I don't know if we'll be. It's going to be happening. I'm going to be there the Thursday night when it comes out.
Yeah, I was like, Glass is not this. It's the 18th, so like the day before screening, 17th. Yep.
We may have to record at a different time. We'll see how it all works out. But
yeah, I mean, I am actually off on the 18th, so I will be able to go see Glass that day.
Okay.
So maybe we record. Maybe we record Friday or something. Or
yes, I think that will work. And so, yeah, we'll have Glass and our reviews of Batman 1989 and Batman Returns.
All right.
This should be a fun episode right there, actually.
Yeah, that by itself should be entertaining.
Chris, I don't know if you saw any of the reviews for Glass. It's not going great.
No, but I did somebody that... I mean, he's overly optimistic.
Yes,
but he seemed to like it, so I'm okay.
I guess my expectations have been put in check a little bit, because it never occurred to me that it couldn't be good. Because I was just like, I love Unbreakable so much.
Unbreakable was good. Split was really good.
You know, Split was a great surprise, and you know. He's had this idea in his head for fucking like 20 years. Like, how could it not be? You know, like he has a plan for what he's doing, right? And I think he did. And he'd even done an interview after he did Split where he's like, I have a draft of Glass. And he's like, it's like, I'm rewriting it, I'm perfecting it. And I follow him on Twitter. He, like, over summer, he's like, I'm doing my fifth pass on this, my sixth pass, my seventh pass. Like, he was just like editing the film over and over and over. I'm like, this guy. And at the end of the day, like, whether you like it or hate it, like, he does have a vision. Like, he does know what he wants to do. Right. And so, and just for me, being such a huge fan, like, I'm serious. If I did, like, a top 10 of my favorite films ever, Unbreakable's on it. So, like, I have a feeling, like, I might be unable to, like, fairly review it at first. I might, like, it's going to be, like, me seeing Batman Forever all over again when I was a kid going... This is great, you know, like, or like when the first time you saw Phantom Menace, where it's like your brain can't process the fact that it can't be good.
Right. It's like, no, that was great. I loved it because it was Star Wars.
Yeah. It's like, this is how I'm going to feel. It's like, I get to spend two more hours with David Dunn and Mr. Glass. Right. And like, you know, we're going to wrap this all up. And so like, I have hope. And like the one, I think you're referring to Kanata.
Yes.
At least that's who I saw, where he was like, he's like, I loved it, and I think that the people that don't like it are wrong, like, they didn't get it. I was like, yes! Like, at least knowing that there's someone out there that's like, no, I mean, again, he is genuinely more positive on a lot of movies, but especially anything that's like comic book or superhero related. But it's just good to know that there's someone out there that like digs those movies a lot, that like walked away going, this was great. So we'll see, man. I'm like real fucking nervous now. But yeah, we'll have that for next week as well as the old Batmans. So check in for that.
Yep, we'll be back.
Yeah, hopefully. Movie dudes.